Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levine. 10 years ago, I worked for Congressman Barney Frank as his legislative counsel, and we talked a little bit about Bob Ney, my next guest, Congressman Bob Ney, who currently works at the Talk Radio News Service. He was known as a true believer, someone intimately connected with Jack Abramoff and lobbying, and a true believer Republican, I should say. Following his conviction in that scandal, though, he's turned around his life a bit. I actually met Bob Ney, had the real pleasure of meeting him. I was a little bit worried at first, but he turns out to be a really nice guy. And he now has a new book out. It's called Sideswiped, Lessons Learned Courtesy of the Hitmen of Capitol Hill. Congressman Ney, we're going to have a longer discussion on your book on another show. But for now, tell me a little bit. You've been the thing that most people are taking from the book is what you said about the current Speaker of the House, John Boehner. Tell me some of the things in your book about him.
Right. Well, he's not happy, but, you know, I didn't just all of a sudden attack him. I talked about his nature, and that was part of my story of 25 years of knowing him, and about the fact that he is inherently lazy. It's nothing that's not an open secret on the Hill. He never really liked to delve into the legislative sides of things. And then I tell about some awkward moments I had with him in the sense of dropping a young lady off at his house at 1:45 in the morning. And I just didn't say that. I said it to show our relationship and how it built and how we sort of, you know, had some moments where maybe some trust factors weren't there. But I talk about a deal he cut with me for money to get out of my seat. And he cut that deal. He denies it. And he says, well, Ney's a felon. Ney's a liar. Well, time will tell. And time will tell that I am telling the truth on it. And I tell all of this because he ties into the Abramoff affair. And I detail that out. So the book goes way beyond John Boehner. That's been the salacious part, though, that, you know, has been drug out, and then the Speaker denied it, which I didn't even think he'd make a comment, to be honest with you. But I think we struck a nerve with him.
Tell me, what brought you to write the book? I mean, I guess most people who've gone where you've gone in those shoes, trying to rehabilitate yourself. I know you've recovered from alcoholism, and what's the purpose of your book?
You know, I served, with Barney Frank and others at a time when we actually did things, when people actually talked to each other, when we came together and made a difference and passed legislation and financial services to help America
Vote right.
Act with, you know, with Steny Hoyer is now the number two guy. People actually communicated, unlike the current Congress. And I put some of this together to tell what's going on in the current Congress and why the attitude is like it is. And I think the John Boehner I knew then is the John Boehner that's out there now. And he could change this. He could, you know, curtail the control of the special interests. But I also, you know, give my opinion on what Congress is like. I talk about prison.
I tell you something. We don't have near enough time. I would like you back for a full discussion right here on the Leslie Marshall Show. And we'll have a much greater discussion. His book is Sideswiped, Lessons Learned Courtesy of the Hitmen of Capitol Hill. Check it out at your local bookstore. It's a very interesting story. This is Mark Levine. We'll be right back at the top of the hour with more on drug policy. 888-653-7543. Just heard, by the way, they've appointed a new pope from Argentina. I actually predicted the pope would be from Latin America. Not that I know anything about the Catholic Church, but I predicted they'd go where the Catholics are. So I get tiny points for that. But we're talking about the drug war, though, not the pope. If you want to call in, 888-653-7543. We'll be right back right after this. I do want to get to some of the folks who've called in. Eddie in San Francisco, welcome to the show.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The question that I have is, if the legalization of marijuana could be a beneficial thing for users, why wouldn't they have more people lobbying behind the use of it? So it could be beneficial to all of people, because I think that if there's more medical evidence and more supporters or some kind of a coalition that would be supportive of the approval of this medical marijuana use.
There's a lot of people that are supportive. You're going to hear a bunch of them on my show tonight. You just heard Chris Hermes. You're going to hear later on from a police chief. He's on the West Coast, not in San Francisco. He's actually a former police chief in Seattle, though he served as a cop in San Diego. He advocates for legalization. There's a national organization for the it's called NORMAL. I think it's Reduction in Marijuana Laws. I forget what the R stands for. There's a whole bunch of organizations out there. You're going to be hearing a lot of them tonight. I don't agree that there's no one lobbying for this. Maybe it's because I live in Washington, D.C., but I see advocates for marijuana legalization all the time. It's definitely a lobby. It's not as strong as the gun lobby, but they're definitely out there.
Yeah, well, because I was thinking is, like, if they have, like, more of the medical professionals behind the, you know, lobbying, there's some kind of grassroots, you know, campaigning, there'd be more people, more politicians would look, listen to those guys, you know, because there's some medical evidence that could be useful for people, and well, not just, like, the abusers, you know?
Yeah, no, I think there is medical evidence, and that's what I'm trying to get from folks, it's the National Organization for Reform of Marijuana Laws. I do know this. When I worked in Congress, I worked for Congressman Barney Frank, and he advocated states' rights to legalize medical marijuana. His view was, hey, let the states decide. It's interesting. In this case, liberals support states' rights. If a state wants to legalize it, it's fine with that state. Conservatives say, nope, we're not going to allow the local and state officials to decide. We're going to force a national policy on everybody. You don't often hear that rhetoric from conservatives, but that is their rhetoric when it comes to drug laws. And one of the things we learned is that the government makes it pretty hard to do studies. And that's one of the issues, actually, that I talk about in my pre-recorded interview with Dr. Kevin Sabet. You're going to hear in just a few minutes. But there are studies out there. I think they should have more of them. You know, we do it with other drugs. We even allow morphine and codeine. So there certainly should be studies and find out what works and what doesn't work. It makes perfect sense to me. But as I said, my next guest disagrees. And I like to bring in all sides on my show so that you can hear both sides of the debate.
That's awesome. Yeah, I just want to say, too, like, you know, we have a lot of people. We know that in Congress, there's a lot of drug companies that lobby to get their laws passed, you know, and we know that a lot of these drugs are, they have all kinds of warnings, so they know they're bad for your health, you know, and they still have people that, you know, all these lawmakers that pass laws for these big, huge drug companies. So I don't think that we should have more support for people that, you know, because there's actually, I mean, marijuana is actually a plant, right? So it's not a, like,
it is. It is a plant, but, you know, so is arsenic, which is a poison. So, look, I mean, that arsenic isn't a plant, but it's naturally in the soil. My point is this. I'm not saying marijuana is all good. I'm not saying marijuana is all bad. I think that sometimes there's this rhetoric that suggests that marijuana has no danger. I disagree with that. But there are also people who suggest that marijuana is far more dangerous than alcohol and tobacco. I reject that, too. The answer is we should study it, see what works, what doesn't. As you say, drug companies have to put on commercials. Hey, it does this good thing, but it also does these bad things. I assume they'd have to do the exact same thing if they sold cannabis. The exact same thing.
Right. That's awesome. Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Eddie. Let me go to Dean in Buffalo. Dean, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on. You are doing a great job.
Thank you.
Pinching in here. Can I just say one thing? I found out that Leslie is in the Fat 100 list of the most influential radio show hosts by Talkers Magazine.
And congratulations to her, and I hope to be there one day myself. Maybe you can help me.
I just wanted to say that I can't believe the U.S. government isn't seizing the cash cow that legalizing marijuana could be.
Sure, absolutely. Tax it and regulate it the same way we do tobacco and alcohol. I don't see why not either.
And alcohol is proven to mess up your liver.
Alcohol and tobacco are dangerous. And that's one of the things that I bring about in the pre-recorded interview you're about to hear with Dr. Kevin Sabet. My point is not that marijuana is perfectly safe. My point is that alcohol and tobacco are dangerous, and I see marijuana, frankly, as less dangerous than those two legal drugs. Not that it's perfectly safe, but less dangerous than those drugs that we already allow. Exactly.
Right. And it's unbelievable that our government subsidizes tobacco farmers, and yet they're like, oh, no, marijuana is evil.
Yep, you got a good point. No question about
it. Anyway, I'm sure there's millions of other bright people who are looking to talk to you tonight, so I'll...
Well, thank you for your call, Dean. I appreciate it. And listen, if you want to get me in that Talkers 100, go ahead and lobby them to include me. There's plenty of room for both Leslie and me on that list, so let them know.
I am starting a Betty White-type petition on Facebook right now.
Terrific. Well, you know what? You can link to the Mark Levine fan page on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk and start that campaign going. All right. Get a lot of people to follow my Twitter feed and put me on Facebook. I'll tell you, I've always been honored that I'm Leslie's first choice whenever to fill in. And so she can be number one, but I want to be number two on that list. So help me out. Thanks, Dean. I appreciate that. Daily Dave, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
Your guest tonight have hit on several important points, but if I can have like 90 seconds.
Go for it.
I think when I try to compare, you know, illicit drug sales to would be the illicit alcohol and the moonshiners. Now, obviously, you know, psychotropic substances have been, you know, are dated back thousands of years. You know, beer and wine, you know, go back 4 or 5 or 8,000 years in human history. So that's not anything that's going to change anytime soon. But when you have a depressed economic situation that many of these people are faced with, the drug trade, certainly I think you can make a comparison to moonshiners. And primarily what most people don't understand is if I can take 10 bushels of corn and refine them down to 5 gallons of alcohol, all of a sudden, you know, my market expands because my transportation costs are less. I know that I have a market somewhere. And so basically, you know, young people in a depressed economy where there's 30% unemployment are going to look for an opportunity, a work opportunity, and whether it's a Walmart greeter or selling a couple dime bags on the corner, they're going to gravitate toward that opportunity.
So your argument is that it helps the economy to legalize marijuana?
Well, no. Unfortunately, the illegality of drugs forces the prices up. And when I make a comparison to corn and moonshine, what happens is people elevate themselves through the market from, let's say, marijuana to cocaine to crack to illegal, what were those pills that,
oxycodone.
The fat guy, Oxycon?
Ones Rush Limbaugh was addicted to, yes.
Right.
By the way, I mentioned that on Fox, and I got disinvited from various shows, but never mind, go ahead.
Right, and then unfortunately, the high cost of Oxycontin and the availability of heroin because of the war in Afghanistan, actually, heroin is less expensive. Heroin and morphine are less expensive now than OxyContin.
But here's the issue, Dave, as I see it. Every drug you can think of, from, you know, caffeine, which is a drug, it has some negative effects, to arsenic, which is poison and will kill you. Every substance, it seems, has positive and negative effects. Now, I'm told actually arsenic has some positive uses. I don't know what those are. But the point is, we are going to ban some things. I mean, we're not going to allow poison to be sold. And we're obviously going to legalize caffeine, which has some dangerous effects. So to me, what I was trying to do with all these guests, and I'm going to try to do with Chief Norm Stamper in just a few minutes, is to weigh the cost of the drug to society with the cost of the drug war. And with marijuana, I come to a clear conclusion. The drug war is more costly than the drug itself.
Right, and I agree with you 100%, because they're in a radical society that my opinion is, we live in a radical society, people are going to seek escape in many different ways.
Sure, and that's why they have alcohol.
Some would say even television is a drug, okay?
Look, people, we're not, I don't want to control everybody's daily lives. One of the things I found most interesting from Dr. Kevin Sabet, the quarterback of the anti-drug movement, is that he seemed to be really concerned that people not get high. And I don't quite get that. I understand that people shouldn't be high, stoned, and drive. I get that. That makes sense to me. People die if you drink and drive. People die if you're high and drive. I get that. But, you know, he really wanted to emphasize pills like Marinol that didn't get you high. And to me, the answer, it wasn't being high alone that's the problem. It's maybe consequences while you're high. But, you know, I don't begrudge people being high. I don't do it myself because I worry about the dangers, etc. But, you know, people have a right, as far as I'm concerned, to do whatever they want as long as you're not harming somebody else. That's my basic pure moral law. And as long as you're not harming somebody else, I don't care if you get high. Now, if you get high and you abandon your children, then I do care. I don't really understand why people don't want people to get high. You know, people get drunk, people watch TV. As long as you're not harming anybody, enjoy your vice.
Right. Okay, well, that was my point earlier, Mark, by saying that, you know, wine and beer and mushrooms, they go back thousands of years, even if they have a religious connection. But, yeah, I'm discouraged by the fact that it's used as an escape.
Well, it is, and let me tell you this. I feel differently as a policy analyst from the way I do as a family member, right? As a policy analyst, I say, you know, people have a right to be stupid. As a family member or friend, if I had a family member or friend who was constantly getting high and couldn't sustain a job and did nothing but sit at home all day and smoke weed, I wouldn't want to jail that person, but I would want to get that friend or family member help, and I'd want to encourage them that there's more to life than sitting at home all day and smoking weed. So I want to be clear, I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just saying that I wouldn't ban it and criminalize it.
Right. And I understand what you're saying. My opinion is, on the same vein, that there are aspects of reality that we should be tuned into, and it's not, physical experiences of family and love and membership in a community, those are things that we need to be straight for so that we can understand, you know, so that we can fully express ourselves as people, and we don't need a buzz to fog that experience. But secondarily is that when these young kids are thrown into jail, there are several states that have these, you know, three strikes, you're out laws.
That's true,
and
too.
So possession with intent to sell, or, as your last guest was saying, possession of a dangerous weapon will get you put in jail for life. And it's events like that that are dragging down whole communities because of the loss of parents.
Solid point, Daily Dave. Thank you very much for calling in and sharing it with us. I appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Back to the show. We got about 5 minutes left. This is Mark Levine. Time to take a couple calls. Let's go to Anna in D.C. Hi, Anna. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I just wanted to ask how you're measuring how dangerous a drug is, because although you keep talking about heroin, which is dangerous, you've mentioned LSD a few times, and there might be accidents related to people while they're on it, but the fatal dosage of LSD is, I don't think many people have overdosed on LSD or most illegal drugs, really.
Well, again, it depends. It depends on the drug. I mean, to me, if you can lose control of yourself, that's probably a drug that we want to keep from being readily available. I mean, marijuana doesn't seem to have that effect. I think people get pretty mellow, and I don't want them driving. But otherwise, cocaine, LSD, if you're going to have a bad trip and start thinking that you're somewhere else and harm some people, I'm not for making all drugs legal. Heroin, again, seems to be relatively calming. I understand Chief Stamper's position about providing methadone to heroin users. But I'm not for abolishing all regulations on drugs, but I do think marijuana, the harm of the drug war is worse than the drug itself.
Okay, well, just one final thing. That's your stance is harm, alcohol is almost twice as toxic, over twice as toxic as cocaine to the body. And then additionally, there's more deaths caused by alcohol each year than almost anything else. So really, alcohol is the most dangerous drug.
Actually, tobacco is the most dangerous because there's 400,000 people that die of tobacco each year. My thing with alcohol is 90% of us can take alcohol and control it. Some 10% of us can't. They're called alcoholics, and I definitely want to do whatever we can to keep alcoholics from drinking alcohol. But for 90% of us or so, we can take a drink. I drink alcohol in moderation. And so I always think it's a weathering thing. I do know, I have to tell you though, and we're running out of time. I only get to one more caller, but I can tell you some horror stories of some people on cocaine that I've known in my own personal life. And for friends of mine. So I'd be a lot stricter on something like cocaine. But I appreciate your call and appreciate your thoughts. Thanks for calling
in. Thank you.
Let me go to line 5. You're my last caller, Patrick in Buffalo. Welcome to the show. Hi, Patrick.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, yes, welcome.
Hey, listen, I'm a recovering addict. I'm coming up on 60 days clean. Thanks for taking my call.
Congratulations.
Oh, thanks, man. It's been a rough road, and if I had known that there was education available that's available here in the state of New York, I would have taken it up 2 years ago.
What were you addicted to?
Heroin.
Okay, there you go.
And, I mean, don't get me wrong, I have a degree in advanced mathematics. I'm a civil engineer. I carried my life every single day, and nobody had a clue. I finally broke down and confessed. And
sounds like you're going to treat Norm Stamper, then, that providing methadone and treatment can actually get people off the drug and into treatment.
Yeah, I believe that police chief is absolutely brilliant. Because my NA meetings, there are 40 to 60 people three times a week that all sit there that feel the same exact way as I do. Like, if we would have known, you know, I mean, every time you use, you look at yourself and you think, hey, I'm an addict, but yet I'm going to still do this. And it messes with your mind every day.
And NA would be one of the best ways out, Narcotics Anonymous?
It is the way out.
Okay, well, that's a recommendation for everyone. I wish we had more time, Patrick. I'm afraid we don't, and you're the last caller. But thank you very much for sharing your story. You can call in another time, and we'll have a longer time to talk. But there you go, Narcotics Anonymous, like Alcoholics Anonymous. Definitely something to try if you are an addict. A quick congratulations to the new Pope. Pope Francis took his name from St. Francis of Assisi because of his care for the poor. That's the kind of Pope I like to hear. Yeah, I'm sure he's concerned on all kinds of other things. But I'm glad we have a Pope from Argentina. It's about time. I'm not a Catholic, but Latinos, people from South America, are two-thirds of Catholics. They should have a representative. This is Mark Levine. Check out my show this Sunday at marklevinetalk.com. We're going to talk about Iran and everything to do with it. Follow me on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk. Like my fan page, the Mark Levine Pen fan page. And rest assured, I'll be back once again to host the Leslie Marshall Show. This is Mark Levine signing off.